It's election time. Welcome to Euronet Plus Big Crunch presidential debate, broadcasting live across Europe. The European elections on the 25th of May will decide Europe's direction for the next 5 years. For the next 75 minutes, four leading candidates for the presidency of the European Commission will be tested by journalists from 15 member states. It's a unique event in European democracy.
And if you want to have your say, join us now on Facebook and Twitter. We will put your questions to the candidates' team right after the debate. Follow this debate with hashtag RockEurope. Fighting for a place in history are, first of all, Jean-Claude Juncker for the Conservatives. Mr. Juncker is a former Prime Minister of Luxembourg and former President of the Eurogroup. Welcome. For the Greens, Ska Keller. Ms. Keller is a German member of the European Parliament and one of the two Green candidates for the presidency of the Commission. Welcome, Ms. Keller. And Martin Schulz for the Socialists. Mr. Schulz is a German member of the European Parliament and current president of the European Parliament. Good afternoon.
Afternoon.
And last but not least, Guy Verhofstadt, a former Belgian Prime Minister and the leader of the Liberals. Welcome.
Thank you.
The debate will be divided into five key topics affecting Europeans: unemployment, austerity, immigration, energy, and finance.
Let's begin with unemployment, the main concern of European citizens. In the EU, almost 27 million of people are out of work, reaching dramatic levels of unemployment in countries like Greece or Spain. For the first question, we are going to go to Hungary. Our journalist Balázs is there. Balázs, can you hear me?
Hi, Balázs.
Hello, good afternoon.
Hello, Balázs, welcome.
Yes, good afternoon, I can hear you.
Okay, perfect. Please tell us your question.
Your question, Balázs.
So, thanks for the opportunity to ask you about unemployment. Since it is one of the biggest problems, despite signs of recovery. So, it will be important to create new jobs in Europe. We know that parts of the traditional European industry went far east in the last 20 years. But what sectors would you focus on to have economic growth which brings jobs, keeping in mind that member states have their own policy on this?
Thank you, Balázs, for your questions. Now we are going to listen to the record question of Andrea, who is in Spain.
Hi, first of all, I would like to thank you for attending to this meeting. The situation of unemployment jobs has caused a great deal of mistrust about what the politicians can do for the young people. The only solution offered to them is to leave their countries. So I would like to know, what do you have to say to these unemployment people, which are desperate, not only from Spain, but from other countries which are facing the same problem? Can and wants the European Union make something for them to help them?
Great. And the last question comes from Portugal. Francisco, good afternoon. Welcome.
Good afternoon.
My Hello, question can you tell is, us your is, question?
Yeah. Is the following. The leader of one of the major Portuguese political parties proposes that part of the unemployment benefit be paid by the European Union. Would you support this proposal?
Thank you, Francisco. Thank you for your clear question. Okay, so concerning unemployment, questions are, what can the EU do to create jobs, having into account the current competences the EU has? Which economic sectors will you focus on in order to tackle employment? And should the EU pay a part of the unemployment benefit? We are going to start with Mr. Juncker, please.
The European Union and thus the Commission doesn't have all the tools in their hands to fight unemployment, because to fight against unemployment is mainly a matter for national governments, and the European Union has to cooperate intimately with national governments when it comes to unemployment. I don't believe that politicians can create jobs. Jobs are created by companies and mainly by small and medium-sized enterprises, but those who are in political responsibility can create a certain number of preconditions leading to an improvement of the employment situation in Europe. I do think that we have to make sure that we'll have, after 5 years, a real unique digital market which brings an added value of 250 billion to the European economy, and we have to further develop and to complete the internal market, mainly in the service sector, which brings another added value of 250 billion to the European economy, which as a whole makes a package of 500 billion, leading to more growth and leading to more employment. Then we have to exchange our best practices. We are doing that, but we are not copying in a proper way best practices in other countries, mainly as far as vocational training is concerned. And we have to make sure that young people, unemployed, can circulate inside the European Union. We have to increase the mobility capacity of young people. They are asking for that. We are not always delivering. I would like us to put into place a policy leading young Europeans during their studies, during their vocational training, to spend at least 6 months, 1 year in another country. I think that these steps could help us to fight this unacceptably high unemployment, but don't believe that the next commission, independently from whom will be the president of the commission, can by its own efforts, without having the support of national governments, bring the unemployment down.
Okay, we'd like to hear Ms. Keller's opinion, please, on this topic.
The European Union can set the right incentives in order to create jobs. And I think there we missed the big opportunity with the last multi-annual budget, like the budget for the next 7 years, because we had proposed, and even some of the Commission proposals were going in the right direction, asking for research and development, for instance, on green technologies. And there it's a great pity that the two big groups have actually supported budget cuts in that area, because now with these budget cuts, we're not setting the right incentives in, for instance, developing further green technology and also other innovative areas. And I think the sectors that are hugely important for creating new jobs are exactly those that are also creating benefit for the whole of society in the area of renewable energies, but also in the area of energy efficiency, but also in education, healthcare, because those are the sectors that really benefit to the society, but that also give quality jobs, because I think it's also really important that we talk about quality jobs, not about unpaid internships for young people. Young people and everybody else needs quality jobs. And even the Commission is saying that with a bit more of effort in reducing CO2 emissions, you could create 6 million additional jobs by 2020. So this is a figure that we shouldn't like underestimate. There's really a lot of jobs there. And this is also something for young people. The youth guarantee that has been proposed for young people, nice start, but it's completely underfunded and indeed pushing young people into internships that don't lead anywhere, that doesn't help. On the last question, I think it's a very interesting idea, this having part of the unemployment benefit paid by the European level. And I think it's a good idea because it helps creating a balance also for the European Union. At the moment, we're having an unfair competition between member states, even though we're part of the same economic zone, partly even the same currency zone. We have a competition that is being done by dumping wages, etc. And this is not a good answer for the European Union. That's why I think we should have more common social aims, and part of this is also the support for the unemployment.
Mrs. Schull, now it's your turn. Now, as Ms. Keller was mentioning, unpaid internships. In fact, do you think it's an unpaid internship a form of exploitation? I mean, is any job a good job?
For sure not, and I think this unpaid internship is one of the biggest problems we have for more or less a whole generation of well-skilled and well-educated young men and women who are hired with a promise. If you, for 6 months, work here unpaid, we employ you, and after 6 months, the enterprise says, thank you very much, for the 6 months, we take the next one. This is a modern style of exploitation. To answer to the three questions very concretely, first question from Hungary. I think our industry should try to develop a very specific European smart reindustrialization, which is combining energy efficiency with the development of modern products. So to invest in research development, in low consumption of energy, and in renewable, and to invest in the grids we need to transport renewable energy across the European Union, which is a precondition for energy union in Europe, but in the same time a tool to create enormous investment that creates also jobs. Secondly, The question by the Spanish colleague. This is one of the most important questions, because we are running the risk that in some of our member states a whole generation is paying with their life chances for a crisis they have not caused. And therefore, I think, what is the best step to bring them immediately to jobs? My experience is in the countries in which the unemployment rate is the highest, the backbone of the economy are small and middle enterprises with one big problem. This is the credit crunch. Their access to credits is not given. Therefore, they can't invest. Therefore, my proposal is via the European Investment Bank and the structural funds of the European budget to create a microcredit program for middle and small enterprises. And if they employ then young people, they should get a privilege on the interest rates or on the time of reimbursement. And on which is concerning the benefit of unemployment, I saw this proposal as well. This is a question which is very difficult because it needs European rules we haven't. Therefore, I'm open for any debate, but I'm very prudent to make a promise to discuss that proposal. I find it very interesting. I share the view of Ms. Keller. But in election campaign, politicians should be very prudent not to make a promise they can't keep after the vote. And therefore, my answer to the third question is, I look to it, I hear it, very interested, but I can't make a promise.
Okay. Mr. Verhofstadt, please, I would like to ask you also, is it possible any kind of regulation from the European Union in order to, I don't know, for example, forbid unpaid traineeships or guarantee a minimum condition?
Yeah, certainly there is, there we can do something, but organizing a European unemployment scheme, I don't understand how it could create jobs for young people. We don't need an unemployment European scheme. We need something completely different. We need another economic strategy in the European Union, because let's face, first of all, what is happening. We have badly managed this crisis the last 5 years. And badly managing this crisis, because we are really stuck in this discussion, austerity, debt. So we are going for austerity. Then some others are saying, hey, we need more debt. After that, we have created more debt. We need again austerity. So we need to come out of this discussion, austerity, debt, and find a way out. Means a new growth strategy that is breaking away from the recipes that have been used the last years. And my proposal is a strategy in which we use a jump forward in the integration of the European Union in the European market as an engine for growth. Take, for example, the banking union. If we have the banking union completely and not what we have today, then we can restore the mechanism of flowing mechanism of credits going to the small and medium companies was broken today. Secondly, a unified capital market. Today, if you have an asset in the north of Europe, you cannot use it to have a credit in the south of Europe, because it are 28 different capital markets. So for interest rates going down, we need it. Other proposal, a common energy community in Europe, so that energy prices can come down. And then the digital market. We have still 28 telecom and digital markets. You use your iPhone, you go from France to Belgium or from Belgium to France, and you cannot use your iPhone for 20 kilometers. And that's the reason we don't have a Google, we don't have a Facebook, we don't have a Twitter. So what we are proposing in an intelligent way is stop making debts. Stop only to talk about austerity. Austerity is necessary, because otherwise you cannot have growth on the long term. But we need a new growth strategy where we use a new jump forward in a European market as an engine for growth. Let's use the scale of Europe to emerge from the crisis. And certainly, let's get rid of overregulation, as we certainly the last 10 years have overproduced.
Okay, now we're going to move on to austerity. Since the beginning of the crisis, austerity measures have been imposed as the remedy for Europe's failing economy. But after 6 years, more and more people are questioning the results. We're going to go to Greece now with Stavros. And do we have Stavros? Hi, Stavros. Thanks for joining us.
Good afternoon.
Let's have your question.
Yes, hello. Do you hear me now?
Yes, Stavros, let's have your question, please.
Good afternoon from Athens. Mr. Juncker, you're saying that you want to reunite Europe. Can you explain us how, if next Commission President, you intend to counter the rigid economic policies in place and actually bridge the gap between the north and south of Europe? And a question to Mr. Schulz. In your speeches, Mr. Schulz, you say that the European Union is in a bad shape and you intend to change this. What is your top priority for this change to happen? And would you, for example, counter policies that have controversial results for countries such as Greece if you are the next president of the European Commission?
Thank you. Let's go to Germany with a video message from Lisa in Germany. You ready to go with that? There's Lisa.
Hi, everybody. I'm Lisa Schöniger from AMS, the German Euronet Plus partner. And my question is about the European solidarity. In Germany, we currently have the situation that the economy is recovering from the crisis. We're doing pretty well. And many people fear now that this development could change again if we have to pay for other countries over and over again, such as Greece. So could you please explain why is it so important to take this responsibility?
Thank you. And our third question in this section, we go to Estonia and Liz by audio connection. Liz, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Thank you. Do you hear me well?
We hear you very well. Let's have your question.
Thank you. Yes. Estonia wants to know what are the concrete advantages of the austerity that EU has applied for many years now. Could you please give some examples of visible results? Thank you.
Thank you so much. Scott Keller, let's start with you. Let's summarize these in two principles. Why is solidarity amongst member states important? And has austerity worked?
Clearly, austerity has not worked. It has actually destroyed something that I would call the European dream. I think if there is a dream that is shared by Europeans, if there's an ideal, then it's this idea of not letting anybody fall, of catching everybody, of supporting everybody. And this European dream has been broken by austerity. Austerity is leading to horrible results, to unemployment, youth unemployment, but it's also creating illnesses. People are not anymore able to pay their medicine in Greece. We have even increasing child mortality in Greece. This is the situation that we're in right now in the European Union, in one of the richest areas of the world. So I think we really have to stop this austerity. It is leading us nowhere. Austerity has not brought forward any good result. It's not bringing forward growth. It's not creating jobs. Not at all. We have to end austerity. Instead, we need European solidarity. We need to reinvigorate this European dream of solidarity, of living together, of caring for each other. And that's where the solidarity comes into play. And when the German colleague was saying, like, why should we pay for Greece? Actually, currently, the German budget situation is so good because we're paying so little for state bonds, because the Greeks are paying so much more. So it's a matter of imbalance that we're having in the European Union that are creating problems for different countries. But if the German economy wants to go on prosper, then we also have to think about who's going to import all the goods that Germany is exporting. And a lot of them go to other European markets. And if you're not having the possibility for people to buy all those German goods that are being produced, then this is not good either for the German economy. So we need to rebalance Europe. We need to understand and accept that we're living in a common environment, that we have a shared economic zone. And for that, we need to balance things out. We can't have an internal competition about who has the lowest jobs, because also Germany has a crisis. We have a low income sphere. A lot of people are not earning anything to buy all the goods that they produce themselves. This is also a crisis.
Okay, Martin Schulz, let's give you an opportunity to answer that. But also, the question was put to you, would you abolish the Troika?
I start with the question of the Greek colleague. Europe is in a bad shape. Yes, the European Union was always a promise, not only for peace. It was a promise for more solidarity, for growth, for jobs, for cooperation across borders between countries and nations, to increase welfare and security for citizens. And let's be honest, the promise for a lot of Europeans was broken. And therefore, there is an enormous mistrust, not only to European, by the way, also to national institutions. And my conclusion is to regain trust, we have to come to an end with some of the developments within the European Union which are completely unacceptable. Speculants make millions of billions and billions of profits and don't pay taxes. And when they make billions and billions of losses, the taxpayers have to pay for them. This is not my Europe. And I think people who are disappointed, who think this is also a European Union they don't want to see, they are right. Therefore, I think we need in Europe a principle. And that if I would become the president of the Commission, I would introduce the principle to suggest to the member states the country of the profit is the country of the tax. Today we are living in the European Union where all taxpayers have to pay their taxes at home. But big enterprises, multinationals can transfer their profits in other countries where they have to pay low or no taxes. Therefore, to regain trust and to put Europe in a better shape, I think another tax policy is very important, on which is concerning the Germans. I am like Scar Keller, German. 35% of German GDP is coming from the export. 60% of our export is going to the European Union. And those 40% on the world markets, to avoid that Germany will become dependent completely from worldwide developments, we should, in our own interest, stabilize the internal market of the European Union, by the way, also as a tool to protect our democracy, our values against other competing regions in the world who are not sharing our values and our standards. Okay. And on which is concerning austerity, austerity has not worked. Austerity the other way around put Europe in a bad shape.
Okay, yes or no answer. Would you abolish Troika?
We did here in the European Parliament with an overwhelming majority, we adopted a report by saying the Troika itself is not a problem. The goal of the Troika is to make itself super fluent.
Okay.
If they achieve, we don't need a Troika. But what they did, the Troika, the content of the Troika is completely wrong.
Okay, maybe we'll come back to that later. Guy Verhofstadt, austerity, has it worked?
No, I'm simply saying, those who are saying here that without budgetary discipline, you can emerge from the crisis. Sorry. Well, Scar Keller said it. You didn't say it, for once, I should say. That's simply not true. But a budgetary discipline is necessary for growth on the midterm and the long term. It's true that only budgetary discipline shall not emerge us from the crisis. That's true. We need a second track. We need the growth strategy. But this growth strategy cannot be based again on making debts. And that is my criticism to you. That is that you use again new debts as the way to come out from the crisis. I think you need another strategy. I explained it in my first intervention, using the market, more integration in Europe as the engine for growth. That said, about the Troika, because I don't want to escape that question. Troika, for me, is a technical issue. It has to be a technical team and not taking the political responsibility. We, as European Parliament and as a future Commission, have to take that. And then finally, on Greece, let's say it like it is. The real reason of the difficulties in Greece are not Europe, are the clientelistic system existing in the country. Both parties, the PASOK and the Nea Dimokratia, have made a clientelistic system in which everybody has to pay for health services, for everything in their society. Professions are not open. The markets are not open. The banks are public banks who are in a bad shape. That's the problem from Greece. And the problem is that both parties are still continuing in the actual government. There need to be a revolution in the politics in Greece themselves if we want to emerge. And then finally, on Germany, I agree, but there is a problem. Taxpayers in Germany, I understand them, don't want to pay any more for everything. But there is a simple solution for that. Let's make a system in which the bondholders receive less interest rates. Instead of asking to German taxpayers, Belgian taxpayers, Luxembourg taxpayers, Dutch taxpayers to pay the high interest rates on bonds that we are paying in Italy, in Greece, in Portugal, and so on. And the system exists, the redemption fund. That could be the solution for the problem.
Let me bring it back to Mr. Juncker. You were a prime advocate of austerity. Did it go too far?
I'm not a fan of austerity. I'm in favor of fiscal rigor, because without fiscal rigor, we cannot bring Europe out of the crisis. But cutting budget deficits, lowering public debt levels is not enough. We need another.
No, my question was, did it go too far? The studies that you based your strategy on were proven to be flawed, that after the 95% of GDP, the growth slows. That was your argument, so you've got to cut the debt right back.
I don't know why you are addressing me by saying that was your argument. That was never my argument.
This was the austerity
argument.
Don't
confuse me with the IMF. These are two different things. I was always in favor of organizing the intersection between solidarity and solidity. In Greece and in other countries, highly indebted, and countries with high deficits, it was not possible to continue this kind of policy, and we had to impose a certain number of measures. But imposing budgetary measures on countries, be it by the Troika, by the Eurogroup, by the European Council, by whomsoever, is not enough. That's the reason why, back in 2009 and 2008, we launched investment packages coordinated at the European level, 250 billion in 2008, 120 billion in 2009, trying to put into place a so-called anti-cyclical policy. That was done, and this effort has to be continued. We need investments in various areas. I mentioned digital market, I mentioned single market, Mrs. Keller was mentioning renewables, research, innovation. All these things have to be undertaken, but don't believe that you can create a growth-friendly overall situation by increasing debt and by increasing
deficits. But how
deficits.
Do you increase growth when there's no liquidity? How do you increase growth when there's no liquidity in the market to invest, to create employment?
I don't think that there is no liquidity in the market. It's obvious that banks have to change their behavior. Banks were helped.
Nor the Commission.
The credit crunch is the biggest problem.
But you don't
solve it by making more debts on the public level. What you have to do is that banks are, again, giving credits to the private sector. And that is possible if you have your banking union. If trusts come back in the banks, automatically these banks shall give money to the small and medium companies. And by unifying our capital markets, then debts come back, but not by making more public debt.
I slightly disagree, Jean-Claude. Mr. Juncker, I wanted to remember you that the credit crunch in some of the member states is really a big problem, and I disagree with you as well, because the problem is that banks, partially those saved by taxpayers' money, get for 0.25% interest rate money from the ECB, and instead to invest it in real economy, they are once more speculating with the money. So I agree, banking union is necessary, but further regulation, especially against this irresponsible speculation. This is key, by the way, to avoid, and if you are always speaking about increasing debts, most of the debts of the countries, the increase of the sovereign debt is a result of the banking crisis.
You cannot regulate the fact that banks have to give money to the small and medium companies. If it was so easy, tomorrow we make a regulation and saying banks give you money.
But when
you need to change your environment. You need your banking union. You need the ECB, together with the European Investment Bank and the Commission, really to launch a real policy of credits, microcredits you call them, to these small and medium companies.
He's a smart guy. He is a little bit like Mark Twain when he spoke about Wagner, this German musician. He said that the music of Wagner is not as bad as it sounds. So it is a little bit the other way around.
My father was an amateur of Wagner. I wake up every weekend with Wagner. We can talk about
this
that.
Scott Keller.
Therefore, you became a liberal. Huh?
Let's finish the segment with Ms. Keller. Austerity, there has to be an end to this at some point. When do we finish?
Austerity should finish as quickly as any hour possible. And if I was Commission President, I would take any steps to stop austerity, because I also don't agree with what you said, Mr. Verhofstadt, and that we cannot invest anymore. You are saying we should not invest in our future. But for me, the biggest debt that we're currently leaving to next and also current generations is a dysfunctional educational system, a non-working medical system. Hospitals are closing. We're leaving a huge social debt to the people in Greece, in Spain, everywhere, homelessness, child mortality, all those things, that is debt, and we shouldn't ignore that social debt. In order to overcome that, we need investment into the future and the crisis that we're living in. It's not just the debt crisis. Mr. Schulz has explained that the debt was partly cause of, consequence of the crisis. At the root of this crisis lies a huge social inequality, capital that's just being speculated with on all levels, and this is creating huge banking problems. This has brought us into the crisis.
Thank you. We need to move to the following topic. Our third topic is migration and mobility. Freedom of movement and the arrival of illegal immigration have become key topics over the last months. For this topic, we are going to start with Delphine, our journalist in France. Good afternoon, Delphine. Hello, Delphine, can you hear us? Hello?
Delphine's gone for coffee.
Yeah.
She can't hear the audio. Let's move on to the next segment in just a moment.
Yeah, let's move to the next question. Florin is in Romania. Let's going to hear the recorded question from Florin.
Good afternoon from Bucharest. I'm Florin Orban from Radio Romania. As you know, Bulgaria and Romania, members of the European Union since 7 years now, are still not admitted in the free circulation Schengen area, and that makes us feel as second-class Europeans. How do you plan, as future executive leaders of the United Europe, to apply the EU laws and regulations in order to give us, like to the other European citizens, the right to travel border-free in the European Union?
Thank you, Florin. Now we are going to hear the question from Italy by audio connection. Good afternoon, Gigi.
Buon pomeriggio.
Good afternoon. Which is your question, please?
Buonasera.
Good. Buonasera lei, and thank you for being here. The question is very stringent, because just today the Italian foreign minister announced that there are 800,000 people ready to leave northern African coast for Europe, I would say, / Italy southern shore. Italian Interior Minister Angelino Alfano complains about the selfishness of the 28 EU states asked to change the mechanism of acceptance and management of immigration of migrants, and asked to expand significantly the system Frontex and its capacity. So the question is, it has come the time to share the burden more than what we did in the past. Thank you.
Gigi, we are going to give a last chance to the question coming from France. Good afternoon, Delphine. Can you hear us now? It seems it's working.
Hi,
it's working.
Hi.
Hello, good afternoon.
Some say that immigration should be the solution to Europe's aging population. Do you agree with that? Or do you think that the EU should implement measures to boost the child rate?
Thank you, Delphine, for your questions. So, regarding immigration and mobility, the three questions are... Is immigration the solution to Europe's old population? Second question, what are your plans for Romania and Bulgaria concerning the Schengen free circulation area? And should member states of the north of Europe show more solidarity when dealing with illegal immigration? And we are going to start now with Mr. Schulz, please.
Yeah. I think immigration is a contribution to the development, economic and to the society development in Europe. Then it is the solution for the European society, I doubt. We need also children. And I think, therefore, to increase the support for families and for increasing the birth rate, I think this is reasonable. It is also, by the way, normal that every country, every nation tries to get the next generation. Secondly, I think that we need a legal system of immigration in Europe. What we have today is the abuse of the absence of a legal migration system, immigration system. There is worldwide a European immigration in other regions. Europeans are leaving from Europe, are immigrating to the United States, to Canada, to New Zealand, Australia. All these big regions of immigration have rules. The European Union hasn't. And therefore, I think we need a rule how to immigrate in Europe. And the precondition is that we have a sharing of quotas between the 28 member states of the European Union. I'm here in this house since 20 years. I was in my first mandate the spokesman of my group for the item. If I replace the date, I could hold my speeches 20 years ago today. Nothing has developed. This is one of the biggest problems. And the last question, I think the Europeans should take into account that the member states in the southern area of Europe are really strongly affected, not only Italy alone. It is Spain, it is Greece, it is Cyprus, it is Malta, small country with an enormous problem. Therefore, solidarity is absolutely key. And solidarity means that we have to discuss with the member states that in the frame of their capacity, they have to take the necessary quotas, by the way, also for political refugees and for those refugees who are coming from civil war regions. Last question, we are a community of law. And in a community of law, there are rules and preconditions to get access to the policies of the European Union. And the Schengen Treaty has a lot of preconditions. Once a country has fulfilled the criteria, it has a right of access. What happened here was that countries fulfilled the criteria, and in the Council were introduced new elements.
Okay.
This is arbitrage, and therefore, once more, in the next verification, if they fulfill the criteria, we should avoid that people have the feeling of first and second class citizens in Europe.
Okay, thank you. Now we are going to go with Mr. Verhofstadt. I would like to ask you, freedom of movement in the European Union is one of the most visible successes for European citizens.
Exactly.
However, some member states are putting this right under question.
Exactly.
So don't you think that this, the fact that they are questioning this right, is a sign, a clear sign of the breakdown of Europe?
Well, I think this labor mobility is essential, but you have to make the difference. We are talking about two different topics here. Migration coming from outside the European Union, and then the mobility inside the European Union. So on the in migration coming from outside, I think we need a legal migration policy, the fastest as possible. And that's the only way to tackle illegal migration and human trafficking, if we don't have a coherent, well-ordered legal migration policy. And also to strengthen Frontex, that shall be necessary. But if we don't have a legal migration policy, then the pressure of illegal migration becomes unsustainable, and that is what we are living today. But on the other point, mobility, that's another issue. Labor mobility, in fact, instead of what Eurosceptics are saying in many countries, is very low in Europe. If you look to the figures, we have only a labor mobility of 2.5%. That's four times less than in America. In America, they have 10% of labor mobility. That means that 10% of the population works in another state than their state of origin. And with us, it is 2.5%. But what is the problem is that this labor mobility is under threat because Eurosceptics and also a number of national governments are saying, yes, but there is welfare shopping, and when these people, Bulgarians and Romanians, they shall come in, they shall use all social benefits. That is what is happening. We are mixing, in fact, labor mobility and welfare shopping. And that's the reason why I think Europe has to come in to, first of all, defend labor mobility, because it's key for our growth. 4 million jobs are vacant for the moment inside the European Union. And the second thing we have to do, we have to develop a European system in which we can avoid welfare shopping, in which we say, for somebody coming from Bulgaria, from Romania, of another country, we have a European scheme that is ready, so a mobility scheme that is ready, so that they have minimum rights based on their country of origin, so that they don't can do on welfare shopping, for example, in Britain, for example, in another country. And so with such a system of a European mobility scheme, you encourage labor mobility because that's key for our growth without falling in welfare shopping where so many people are afraid of.
Okay, thank you. We are going to go now to Mr. Juncker. We were talking about solidarity between the South and the North, between the North and the South, let's say, about illegal immigration, asylum seekers. How do we materialize this solidarity? Is the solution more money to the South, more border control?
When it comes to migration, to illegal migration, member states of the European Union has to adopt a solidarity profile. First, I do think that the European Union will need immigration over the next decades, not only because the population is aging, but it's enriching. Immigration very often is enriching a society. Second, I do think that we have to work on legal migration, there I'm joining those who are requesting that. Third, I do think that as far as asylum seekers and refugees are concerned, we have to try to contribute to the resolution of the problems where they are created. I would like member states of the European Union to increase their aid development instead of reducing their aid development program. That's a major mistake, that in the crisis we are first hitting those who are having major problems far away from here. I do think that solidarity has to be organized in a target-oriented way. I do think that we need a stronger financial solidarity by those who have the means in order to support those who are the first victims, I don't like the expression, of illegal immigration. I do think that as a European Union, we have to co-finance via the budgets of member states the high costs of the return programs. Malta, Italy, Greece, they have to pay for the return programs.
Your party doesn't really take that perspective, does it? On the right, the Conservatives, you know, they are the most opposed to immigration. They're the most opposed to sharing the burden. So this must be your personal perspective.
You have to read the programs of the different parties of my European party. You are asking me. I'm giving you my answer. I will convince those in other parties and those in my party who are not sharing these views. And we have to transform the European approach when it comes to these problems, and we'll do it.
How would you do it? How would you make the transformation?
I was just explaining before you were interrupting me that we have to co-finance the return programs. We cannot leave poorer countries with the costs of all these return programs, and that's exactly there where we have to show more solidarity between richer and poorer European countries. We have to increase the protection of our external borders, and we have to accept that those countries fulfilling the criteria of joining the Schengen area should be admitted. The outgoing Commission was proving that Romania and Bulgaria have fulfilled the criteria. It's two or three member states which are refusing that, by the way, not led by Christian Democrats and by Conservatives, but by others.
Thank you.
One of them.
Ska Keller, how do we deal with illegal immigration in Europe?
Well, first of all, it's very interesting to hear that there's a broad consensus here on legal migration. I'm a member of the Home Affairs Committee in the European Parliament, which deals with this issue, where it's impossible to get a majority on legal migration. And the Commissioner on Home Affairs has actually also said that no member state was supporting any proposals to legal migration. But it's very nice that after the European elections, I'm sure we'll find a consensus on that. Also, very good. I'm very happy to hear that there is a broad consensus also on safeguarding the free movement within the Schengen area. Unfortunately, all of your different political groups have voted for introducing temporary border controls within the Schengen area.
No,
yes, the ALDE. It's true.
Completely
no, it's true. No.
True.
Okay, after the debate, I'll show you.
It's not after debate. We have to explain it now that it's untrue what you said.
Wait.
That we have safeguarded that the Schengen acquis is still applicable.
Okay, but
and the exception that is made was to counter proposals by the Council to end the Schengen acquis. It's the opposite.
Let's go to the opposite of what you're saying. We're going to leave Ska Keller to answer this question, please.
Yes, okay. If I may please finish. I mean, you were talking already, and I'm looking at the votes that we had. And it's a public information. If you want to challenge it, then you maybe talk to the European Parliament publication department, because that's also the information that's out in the public. So if you really take a different stance, then you might want to correct that.
Is it possible
and,
to raise a question to her?
Yeah.
Okay.
You say afterwards.
It's very nice to have a debate.
Okay. I want to get back to it. Yeah?
That's sure. In the end what we had a majority, what there was a majority for, and it was us who voted against having this temporary border control introductions. On migration towards the European Union, I think it's a really important topic. On the one hand, sure, there is legal migration, which is a big problem. Like, we should enable that. And by the way, I still refuse to talk about people as a burden for member states. People are people. They're human beings who are coming in need for looking for either a better life or in need of protection. And there is indeed a great amount that the European Union could do much better. Let's look at the Syrian refugee crisis. outside Syria, then there's more than 3 million refugees. They are in Lebanon, they are in Jordan, they are in Turkey, where the states are taking care of the
quick
refugees.
Question, Martin Schulz.
Come on, I didn't have at all any possibility to say anything on migration because I was interrupted. And I would like to make the point that the European Union should do much more in taking on refugees because at the moment we're taking on ridiculous numbers and even those resettlement programs are not being fulfilled. I would like to make that point. The European Union has to do much more. If we want to take the Nobel Peace Prize, then we also have to show our responsibility towards those people who are in need of protection.
Okay,
I discuss it with her after the... it's not so important.
Very gentlemanly.
Okay.
Let's move on to our next topic. We're going on to energy. The crisis in Ukraine has put energy security at the top of Europe's agenda. How do we protect our energy supply and at the same time meet our climate demands? We're going to come to a satellite connection in a moment. This is something which... we're going to go to the core question first, but this whole issue has changed. 6 months ago, we were talking about energy in a totally different context. Today, it's in the context of foreign affairs. So let's hear our first audio question.
Hello from Poland. The Polish Prime Minister Donald Tusk called for an energy union within the European Union in order to gain energetic independence from Russia. He also suggested that the EU should pay up to 75% of the costs for the gas infrastructure needed to be able to create the efficient network. So what do you think? Does the EU need such an energy union?
That was Agata in Poland. Thank you. Let's go to our next question.
Good afternoon from Zagreb. Everyone agrees that Europe needs to improve its energy security. That has become a mantra of EU politicians and national governments alike. But there is far less consensus when it comes to possibilities to achieving it. So my questions are, should we use nuclear power and should Europe welcome fracking or shale gas extraction? Thank you.
Thank you. That's Barbara in Croatia. Are we ready for a satellite connection? Okay, we'll come to that in a moment. So let's start with nuclear energy and fracking. Scott Keller.
Nope.
Why?
We don't want nuclear energy because it's a high-risk technology that is also not clean if you look, for instance, at uranium mining, and it's also not cheap because all of us, all taxpayers, are paying the subsidies for nuclear energy in case of a catastrophe, we would all pay the waste management, so to say. We would have huge areas devastated. So no to nuclear, very, very clearly. And also no to fracking, because this is also a very unsafe technology. And we're seeing already the consequences throughout Europe. So this is the wrong answer. The right answer is to invest into renewable energy, but also into energy efficiency. And yes, we need to become more energy independent. We shouldn't rely on Russian oil and Russian gas. We have to look at our own resources, but the European Union resources, that is wind, that is sun, that is the stuff that is renewable that we're not going to run out of. And this is what we need to invest in with our European Union budget as well as in the member states.
Okay, we're going to come back in just a moment. We've got our audio line.
Yes, hello.
Hi, how are you? Thank you. This is Latvia Artoms. How are you?
Yes, I'm good. Well, speaking about the energy union, I have another question. The Latvian president made a very particular proposal. He suggests to have a very common contract between all EU member states and Russian company Gazprom. That could potentially ensure a better gas price, especially for smaller member states, and would reduce the ability of Russia to use energy as a political weapon. So would you support signing a common contract between the EU and Gazprom?
Okay, let's go to Mr. Juncker. And would you support this?
Yes, I would support this. This is part, by the way, of the ideas put forward by the Polish Prime Minister Donald Tusk and supported by the French President, if I'm well informed. I do think that we would have a different negotiation power if we would try to pool our energy demands. We have to lower and to reduce our dependency on Russia for obvious economic reasons, but also for political reasons. And if we can bring gas from the east to the west, we have to put us into the technical possibility to bring the gas from the west to the east. We have to diversify our energy supply in Europe. We have to enter negotiations with different parts of the world in order to be less dependent on Russia. And energy efficiency is of the importance. It's not when I'm talking about the necessity we have to create an energy union. It's not only about the channels, about supply. It's also about the right and proper energy efficiency supporting policy we have to put into place in Europe. As far as nuclear and fracking is concerned, I have to repeat what I already said elsewhere. The question of the energy mix is a question of national responsibility. I always let governments who were against nuclear and who were against fracking, but energy mix is a matter for national member states.
Okay, let me go to Mr. Verhofstadt.
If you say that the energy mix is something on the national level, then we shall never have our European energy community that we want. I am just the opposite view about it. I think that you have to put the decision on the energy mix in Europe on the European level. And secondly, that you have also to put the establishment of a grid, a network, also on the European level. And there you have to decide what type of imports you want and what type of energy mix you want. Because, let's be honest, it's a little bit hypocritical what is happening now, when there is the Energiewende in Germany, but they are importing nuclear energy from France. Well, it's easy to be to make an Energiewende in Germany and then to import a number of kilowatts coming from France and made by a nuclear power plant. So, let's do it on the European level. Then this way of dealing and wheeling is not longer possible. So, and I think that an energy mix shall be necessary. I like renewables. The more renewables, the better it is. But in any way, it shall be a mix. And secondly, it means a European community. That means that the decision of where we are putting energy in. Now it's coming mostly from the east and it's go to the west. We need also to have the possibility to have entrance points in the west. That energy can come, for example, from other continents in the west and then to the east. And from the south to the north. And that's the grid. And for the grid, we need huge amounts of infrastructure. And that's the reason why my first priority as president of the EU Commission shall be to put that energy community, European energy community, on the table of the Council and of the Parliament.
Okay, and Martin Schulz, you would sweep it straight back off the table, yeah?
I'm fascinated. The world of
Keith. That's good that you're fascinated.
Wait a moment. I'm fascinated. The world of Keith Verhofstadt sounds nice, but it's a little bit beside the reality. So Germany is not only importing nuclear energy, we are still using nuclear plants in Germany. The Energiewende, wonderfully pronounced, is the goal to come to an end with the use of nuclear energy, carbon-based energy, and to replace it by renewables and energy-efficient products and plants. And the third industrial country of the world, with an increased energy demand, tries to leave from nuclear energy, to leave from carbon-based energy, and to replace it by renewables. This is a unique project, and if we achieve in Germany, I think we should discuss if this is also possible on a European level. Therefore, I'm happy that you support the Energiewende. And now, I think
without imports of nuclear energy from France.
Okay. Yeah, wait a minute. Okay. We need the investment in grids, creating jobs. We started with this. This is a project all
so
over in Europe.
So we could spend our way out of recession, huh?
Pardon?
We could spend our way out of recession on an energy project.
This is an enormous project to need the grids for the energy union. You need the necessary infrastructure to invest in the infrastructure. This creates jobs, growth, and less dependence from the energy supply from outside European regions. On which is concerning the contract with the Russians, yesterday I was called by him as naive when I said besides sanctions, we should discuss about common and shared interests. It's exactly what the Latvian president proposed. These are common and shared interests which could help us to reduce the tension around Ukraine. I agree entirely.
Let's go back to Ska Keller because she was interrupted before. Should the EU have a common position concerning fracking and nuclear energy? Because concerning climate change, there are no borders. If something happens in one country, the others are going to be affected.
Indeed, and it's a strange coincidence that nuclear power plants are usually built very close to the border. So indeed, it's a European concern. And if there is a problem with a nuclear power plant in one country, we're all going to be affected. So yes, I think indeed that we should coordinate much closer on the European level and really go for the renewables at the European level, because like this we save the planet, but we also create the jobs that are here to stay for the next 20, 30 years and that create good employment. And we shouldn't forget that energy, it's also a social question, like whether the question of whether you can afford your energy or whether you are living in polluted areas. I'm from a coal mining area where people are suffering, have been suffering a long time from pollution and are now being threatened to be thrown out of their houses because there is mining going on and the mining is expanding, even though the region is self-sufficient in renewable energy. And it's madness that people are driven off their homes and villages that are century old just because in order to increase the profits of some coal mining companies. So it's also a social issue. We shouldn't forget that.
Okay, well, fracking for you is a bad word.
Yes, indeed, it's a very bad word.
But we now live in a world where security of people in small communities as well as cities really depends on the steady flow of gas and of energy of different types. And now we're being threatened by Russia and by other complex situations across the world, not just by supply, but also increase in price. We're in an incredibly difficult moment financially as well, and fracking's there to deliver a quick result at an achievable cost. Would you tolerate fracking in the medium term to achieve renewable energy in the long term?
Fracking is by no means cheap, and it's also not just readily available. It's also a high-risk technology. You're pumping chemicals into the ground where nobody knows yet what exactly is going to be the effect of that. I don't know if you want that to happen in your area, in your environment,
where
you're taking out the groundwater.
But we don't want the gas supply to stop in Europe either.
And I can safely say that we Greens, we've been advocating for renewable energies ever since we existed. So we're not coming late on that.
Okay, let me ask Mr. Juncker. Mr. Juncker, should we tolerate fracking in the short term and put some of the investment in that into renewable energy for the long term?
As I said, energy mix is a matter for national member states. I'm not in favor of fracking because we don't know about the real consequences. We don't know about the end cost of fracking. So I think that further research has to be done in that domain, but for the time being, this technique is not sufficiently developed that we can give a European impetus to use that technology. So my remaining question, answer is, energy mix is for member states. And
Let me ask same question. Fracking in the immediate term to finance renewables in the long term?
I think fracking is not a solution. I'm like Ms. Keller. I was very long time the mayor of a former coal mining city. I know the same problems. Fracking is an unknown technology, but we should be clear. It will happen. Fracking will be decided. It is in the hand of the member states, and I'm absolutely sure that there will be member states who will allow fracking, other member states not. The Americans have already decided. The real question is not fracking, yes or no. The real question is, which is the most efficient strategy to make Europe independent from energy supply, from dictatorships, from countries who could combine our energy dependence with political pressure they make on us? And this is the important point. And here is my feeling that the only way to achieve on the long term is renewable energy and the combination between reindustrialization and renewables, energy efficiency, to develop low consumption products. This is, in my eyes, an industrial program of Europe for the export in other parts of the world. Here we can combine sustainability with reindustrialization. This is, in my eyes, the best way.
So do the Liberals consider fracking a bad word also?
We consider it if, first of all, there is proof of it scientifically that there is no bad consequences for the environment.
So is an energy source that has no bad consequences?
No, we have said that from the beginning, first of all, proof of that scientifically, there is no damaging of the environment, then you only can start.
And that's the acceptance of citizens.
And that is also the position of the European Parliament, that's it. little bit also hypocritical, typical for Europeans, because we shall import in the next years a number of energy sources, also gas coming from the US, and in this gas shall be cracking gas.
Okay, our final theme for the presidential debate is finance. The crisis started with a rapid financial collapse. Let's hear what our candidates' proposals are going to be for the financial system. We're going to go try to go to Slovenia. Do we have Slovenia on the line? No, right. Let's go to a recorded question. Let's hear the question.
Jean-Claude Juncker, you were Prime Minister of Luxembourg for nearly 20 years. During this time, Luxembourg has strengthened its position as the financial center in Europe. As president of the Eurogroup, you always opposed any measures that could jeopardize the financial interest of your country. Now, should you become the next president of the European Commission, would you be ready to defend and enhance transparency for the movement of capital, like, for instance, raising the professional secret of financial trust who organize this tax evasion?
Okay, that was Olivier from Belgium. I think we'll go to Slovenia now.
Hello.
Hi, how are you?
Yes, I can hear you.
Good.
Hi, I'm okay.
Hi,
how are you?
Good, thank you, Lisa. Let's have your question, please.
Of course. Well, in the past, the options for failing European banks have been either an unpredictable collapse or taxpayer bailout. In Slovenia, this was also the case. But recently, as we know, the European Parliament has adopted a new package of legislation set to protect European taxpayers and ordinary bank depositors from bank failure. Are these rules strict enough? And how can you guarantee that European taxpayers will not have to pay for collapsed banks in the future? Thank you.
Thank you. Let's go to Bulgaria, and we have Irina on the line. Irina, can you hear us?
Yes, hello.
Hi.
Good afternoon from Sofia, Bulgaria, a state outside of the European Monetary Union. We know that EU member states who are not members of European Monetary Union cannot fully participate in the European Banking Union mechanism. So could you please specify what do you expect from the non-Eurozone member states? Challenges, obstacles? Do you think that all member states should be in the European Banking Union, or should countries like Bulgaria be kept outside of it?
Thank you, Irina. Okay, Mr. Juncker, we'll start with you on this. Let's summarize two questions. Can you guarantee that citizens won't pay again for collapsed banks? And if yes, how? And should all member states be part of the banking union?
I had the first question from your Belgian colleague, and I would like to respond to that question, which was not a question but a provocation.
Sure.
First, I'm no longer Prime Minister of Luxembourg. I'm not asking Guy Verhofstadt what he did. What is he doing now? Because he was a Prime Minister of Belgium and because Belgium adopted exactly the same tax strategy when it comes to financial centers like Luxembourg, because both of us, due to a European compromise I introduced when I was in the chair of the ECOFIN in 97, we introduced a withholding tax in our countries. And now we are moving
in
to
97.
The... That was the decision.
Yeah, I was not Prime Minister.
No. That's why it was easy to make the decision. But when you were when you were Prime Minister, you did take the step. So let's not confuse these things. When I was president of the ECOFIN in 91, we harmonized the VAT. So Luxembourg had to increase by 3% its normal rate of VAT, as Germany had to do. So saying that Luxembourg is blocking everything is simply not true. It's easy to say, it sounds good, but it is brutally, brutally untrue, and we have to react against that. And further progress has to be made in the area of taxation. The European Union is working on business taxation. We are working on broadening the basis for taxation of different financial products. So things are going their way. And by the way, I was not blocking progress in the tax area when I was in the chair of the Eurogroup, because the Eurogroup in no way has competencies to harmonize taxation in Europe. That's a matter for the ECOFIN. The Belgian colleague should be informed before trying to provoke me, and he succeeded, by the way, to do it. Your question was...
The second point was to do with the banking union. Should all the member states be part of the banking union?
They are. Of course, all the member states are concerned by the banking union, and those who are outside Euro can join all the mechanisms which have been put into place as far as the banking union is concerned. Banking union, I don't like the expression, by the way, I prefer the banking surveillance, is a model which had to be adopted recently by the parliament. The contribution of the parliament is of the highest importance. And this banking union is the guarantee that never again we'll be in the very same situation we were in at the beginning of the crisis,
Schultz.
Because we have cut the link between banks and the sovereign.
Okay, Martin Schulz, are we going to pay for the banks all over again?
The banking union, to answer to the question from the colleague in Bulgaria, includes also those countries who are not members of the Eurozone. We have a combined structure. And because speculation could happen also outside the Eurozone and affect all of us, therefore it was necessary to combine the role of the European Central Bank with the role of the EBA, the European Banking Agency in London. That's what we did, and all the member states are in with different systems and voting rights, but at the end they are in the banking union. The second question, taxpayers paid for bankrupt banks. Banks speculated and made profits, and when they made losses, the bank taxpayers had to pay for them. The principle, taxpayers save banks, was the principle of the European Union, leading to enormous mistrust. What the European Parliament did, and this is in my eyes one of the biggest achievements of our period, is to introduce the principle, banks save banks. We have a banking fund on a European level where banks have to pay in. It's a kind of assurance of banks. And if there is a bank in a risk, they have to pay from this banking fund. This is a new principle. Perhaps not enough, because we, the European Parliament, we wanted to go further. The member states were reluctant.
What did you want to do that the member states wouldn't do?
To Europeanize the whole system, and not to let, at the end, the decision-making partially in the hand of the member states, which could lead, at the end, to the fact that the public budget pays, and not the stakeholders, the shareholders, and the depositors. So this is this was the main controversy between us and the member states. But at the end, the European Parliament achieved to introduce from a basic point of view the principle banks save banks and not taxpayers have to pay for speculants.
Okay, Guy Verhofstadt.
Yeah, maybe first on, because we spoke about Luxembourg, the new Prime Minister Xavier Bettel in any way give up the bank secrecy now. In a deal that has been made, in a deal that has been made a few weeks ago. But I don't want to enter into Luxembourg politics. I'm not so keen on that. I want simply say what Xavier Bettel did as the new Prime Minister, Liberal Prime Minister.
When I was Prime Minister, I announced.
We'll come back to that
on April 10, 2013.
The next time, I think you invite Xavier Bettel, then he can have a direct debate with.
Mr. Juncker about the banking secrecy.
But on the content itself of the banking union, the banking union. I think that we did a great job, but not enough. My fear is that the 50-60 billion that are in the fund, when there arrives something with the bank, is not enough, and so we need to enlarge that system. By making two types of contributions, I think that the contributions cannot be the same for all types of banks. For me, an investment bank has to give a higher contribution because an investment bank is representing a higher risk than a saving bank. An ordinary saving bank should have less contributions, less high than investment banks. That's the first thing. The second thing is that I think that banks have to do, first of all, the funding now of this resolution mechanism so that taxpayers' money is no longer involved. They have to recapitalize based on the new rules of Pile 3. That's also a huge task. And then we want also that banks give more money to the small and medium companies, the fastest as possible, because the credit crunch we talked in the beginning of the program is mainly the most problem. I think for doing that, in the next year, the ECB, European Central Bank, has to come in to secure with what we call a new LTRO, a financing from the ECB. So to secure these two things. First of all, that money is going directly to the fund, resolution fund, so that we are sure that no taxpayers' money can be involved to recapitalize a bank or to rescue a bank.
And secondly, to make a condition that they only receive that money for the ECB if they transfer that money in cheap credits to the small and medium companies.
Okay.
That's absolutely necessary. Okay. Otherwise, we still have the credit crunch, we still are blocked, and we shall never emerge from the crisis.
I must let Mr. Juncker reply to Mr. Verhofstadt first.
Wait a minute.
I'll come back just a moment. Mr. Juncker, you can reply just for a brief answer, please.
It's a pleasure.
It was unfair to say that the new Luxembourg Prime Minister abolished the banking secrecy. I announced that back in April 2013, and as Mr. Verhofstadt perfectly knows, I was trying to do exactly the same thing, and that was always blocked by liberals in Luxembourg.
Okay, Mr. Schulz, I'll try to come back to you tomorrow. I want to give Scott Keller an opportunity to speak on this first.
It was exactly what I wanted to say, to be honest.
Okay.
I disagree on most on financial and tax question with Jean-Claude Juncker, but we should be honest. It was his government who announced the end of the banking secrecy. Xavier Bettel is much nearer.
You can rewrite history a few times.
No, wait a minute now. Bettel is much nearer to me than Juncker in a lot of questions, but no. This is a question of honesty.
Do we need all member states in the banking union?
I think we need to continue the banking union, make it much stronger, because the capital requirements, for instance, on banks, that's not enough. We need to make sure, really make sure, that it's not the citizens that are bailing out banks, but that's the owners of the banks who are doing their share. We need to put an end to this financial speculation that is throwing around money, like speculating on food, for instance, on stuff that is really necessary for people's survival. There we need to get in. And we also need to stop banks throwing people out of houses, like it's happening in Spain, where people end up in homelessness, but they keep their debt to the bank. They continue paying to the bank, even though they have lost their houses. This is incredible.
Do you all agree
this
with
is
that?
A scandal.
Does everyone agree with that?
And this is also part of social justice. I think the tax justice, that everybody pays their fair share of tax, and that especially goes for big companies, that is also part of social justice. We can't say, you know, let the poor people pay for the rule of law, for the parks, for the kindergartens. That's everybody's share.
Absolutely.
Okay. Mr. Scholz, you're fine.
I agree.
That was what I said
at the very beginning of our meeting here, our discussion. Taxpayers pay for losses of speculants who pay nothing as taxes when they make enormous profits. But we have, I think, a conclusion now, and I want to get back to one of the events.
Okay, we're close to the end of our time, so let's make it quick, please.
People in the demonstrations claim Europe saved the banks and not the people. What part of this is true, Ms. Keller?
That's true.
Well, it has been true in the past, but we should make sure that this has never happened again. I want a Europe that cares about the people, about the needs of the people. For that, I think we need more social rights in Europe. Europe should take more care of the social rights of people and regulate banks more clearly. And for that, I'm also really shocked that the Commission wants to also talk about financial regulation in the Transatlantic Free Trade Agreement, because the European Commission is asking the U.S. government to lower their financial market regulation. And this is not the policy I want to see in the European Union.
Eurosceptics are always, they are not here, but Eurosceptics are always attacking Europe and saying Europe is the cause of this,
is
the cause
of
that,
is
the origin of that. And what we see here, a good example, that is that the banking union, and Europe has created a banking union with rules that it did not longer taxpayers were paying. That's a European regulation which is making it impossible that taxpayers are paying the bill for losses on a national level. And that's a good answer for me to Eurosceptics, that Europe is really the solution for our crisis and also for the other challenges in the future.
But this claim, Europe saved the banks and not the people, is not coming only from Eurosceptics. It's coming from the people going to demonstrations.
Exactly, and that we have changed. So it is not Europe who saved the banks. Sorry, it are national authorities who saved the banks. It were national governments who have or nationalized or put money in their banks. That was not Europe. There didn't exist a European supervisor at that moment in the beginning of the crisis. We have created this European supervisor do no longer have this situation that it is national governments who are doing it. And we created a European regulation who makes it impossible that taxpayers' money is used to save banks. And that is what I'm saying. When we got a financial crisis and when banks were saved, it was by national authorities. Okay. And it is European authorities who make it impossible. And that's, for me, the best answer we can give to Euroscepticism today.
Mr. Juncker, the final questions. We're going to close in just a moment. So, Eurobonds, is this part of the solution for the future? You supported them in the past, and you're not so clear about it now.
In an ideal world, it would be the solution. But we are not living, unfortunately, in an ideal world. I was in favor of Eurobonds in principle, but I always said that some preconditions have to be fulfilled before you can launch Eurobonds. And these preconditions are that we have a by far better coordination of economic policies, that we have a greater European say when it comes to national budgets, when we have given a certain number of reforms to the economic and monetary union, then you can introduce Eurobonds. If you would introduce Eurobonds tomorrow morning, it wouldn't help in no respect.
For one more answer on this. Mr. Scholz, perhaps.
Uncontrolled banks and irresponsible speculators led Europe to the deepest crisis in which we are now, and taxpayers had to pay for it. This is a reality, and if I would become President of the European Commission, I will put on my highest priority that such a development will become impossible in the European Union once more.
Okay, yes, no answer, Ska and Guy. Do we want Eurobonds? Ska first.
Yes, I think we need Eurobonds because we are a common economic zone, so it also makes sense that we have common bonds, but of course with common rules as well.
Okay, Guy Verhofstadt.
Yeah, everybody knows the answer. Yes, I'm in favor of that, but not in a way to make it impossible for countries or make it easier for countries not to do their reforms. I just should create it by saying to the countries, those who do their reforms, they can use the bonds.
Excellent. Thank you so much. Best luck with the campaign as it continues. Well, that's it. 75 minutes, 4 candidates, 15 journalists. Thank you for joining us. You can share the debate online a little later, post it on Facebook and Twitter. Segments and summaries of the debate will be available too. Our thanks to Jean-Claude Juncker, Sky Keller, Martin Schulz and Guy Verhofstadt. Thanks for watching. I'm Brian Maguire.
And thanks for watching. I'm Aynara Vasconiana. Don't forget to vote.